Hello, I'm Tom Weber. Thanks for listening to NPR News here on the radio, online, or on our podcast. This hour, we're continuing our look at NPR's ground-level survey in which we ask people all over the state what they think about the future of Minnesota and their own lives. More on all of it. You can see all the results, nprnews.org/ground-level. Today, immigration. The survey found a deep divide in Minnesota attitudes towards immigration. People in the large urban areas tend to see the state as being on the right track in welcoming immigrants and refugees. In rural parts of the state, feelings were different. This division is especially playing out in St. Cloud, home to a growing Somali-American population. We're going to get perspectives from St. Cloud in a moment, but first, an overview of the survey from Andy Egbert, who is with the APM Research Lab, which is located here at NPR, created here in the last year at NPR. The APM Research Lab did this big survey. Andy, it's good to see you again. Start off by explaining, this is a series of questions that are called right track, wrong track. What does that mean? Why is that important?
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Well, this was part of our ground level survey, and we asked a series of questions about 9 major issue areas that really touch on our shared public life. And so broadly speaking, we asked people whether they felt that Minnesota is on the right track or the wrong track in these areas. And they were all areas that started with a verb. So based on what we're doing, right? Mm-hmm. So how would you say we're doing educating children, strengthening the economy, caring for older adults? And this immigration question was posed to people as whether you feel we are on the right track or wrong track when it comes to welcoming immigrants and refugees.
So the way that it's framed that way will give you an insight. You didn't ask a specific, are you pro-immigration or pro-refugee or anti? You didn't specifically ask that, but the way people answered these questions, are we on the right track or wrong track to welcome immigrants and refugees, that does give insight into how we feel as a state on this issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So the question itself is very broad, right track or wrong track. But fortunately, on this question, we have all sorts of responses that people gave us that explain their opinion. Mm-hmm. And I know we're going to talk about those there. Generally, we found overwhelmingly people who were favorable to kind of our present condition with immigrants said right track. And those who are not favorable said wrong track.
And it's interesting on these other things. So, for example, are we on the right track to provide safe drinking water? 85% said yes. An overwhelming number. Protecting lakes and rivers, we're getting good marks there. Educating children, we're getting good marks. Welcoming immigrants and refugees, while still a majority of people saying it's the right track, it's way down on the list, second to last there, Andy.
Yeah, it's absolutely very low. A third of Minnesotans said we are on the wrong track for this. And as we broke it down by geography and some other characteristics, huge divides opened up. So yeah. Really, if you want to have a spirited conversation around your Thanksgiving table, you might want to bring up immigration, because we saw really, really deep divides as we looked at some geographic and race, income, education,
right,
other divides on this question.
Just one example, Minneapolis-St. Paul, just the two cities, 73% say we're on the right track. In the St. Cloud area, which we're going to be talking about this hour, 39%, less than half. Not quite less than half, but just a striking difference there by region.
Yeah, absolutely. We saw really, really large differences patterned around the state. So as you mentioned, Minneapolis-St. Paul, almost three-fourths of people living there said we are on the right track on this question. And really, we have kind of a pack of geographies that were much more favorable. And that includes the central cities there, but also the suburbs, the Duluth area. They were all at two-thirds or higher, up to three-fourths there. Rochester, the greater Rochester area, kind of falls in the middle at about 60%. And then we have those areas of the state where less than half of the folks felt that we're on the right track for immigration. And those areas were the greater St. Cloud area, a little bit larger than St. Cloud proper, just for those folks listening.
Mm-hmm.
And then the areas of our state that are more rural, small town, and large town, kind of as we consider their characteristics. So, yeah, Broadly speaking, the northern and central and southern parts of Minnesota, with those other communities removed.
And as you mentioned, Annie Egbert, we also allowed on the survey in various parts open-ended answers. So just write what you feel. You don't have to click this box or that box. Just tell us your thoughts. And our colleague here, Cassie Absar, also from the research lab, looked into these. And Cassie, you were telling me before the show that of all the things we asked about on this survey, which talked about way more than just immigration, mm-hmm. the open-ended answers were what, by far concentrated on in this immigration question?
So yeah, this you can really see the divide in this immigration question. I mean, it came out in various questions that we talked about, and there were some major themes that really did stick out. So we have this idea of acceptance and integration of immigrants and refugees into the community, and that goes on the right track and wrong track, where people are saying Minnesota is welcoming or we're too welcoming. The immigrants are assimilating well or they're not assimilating enough. And then there's this idea of jobs and contributions and resources. People who are coming into the state, quote unquote, are using too much of our resources. We need to prioritize, quote unquote, Minnesotans. Some others are saying they're productive members of our society. And so throughout the show, I'll be pulling quotes mm-hmm. that really reflect those answers. And can I just make one quick note?
Please
so there's
do.
A there's been a lot of conversation about this idea of wrong track for mm-hmm. welcoming immigrants and refugees and how some people may be saying, okay, well, I don't think we're doing enough. That's why we're on the wrong track. We need more resources.
Yeah.
And so after reading hundreds of responses, I can say that is a small handful of people. Mm-hmm. So overall, people who say wrong track are.
And so that's a note for the way you're actually saying we should interpret people who say wrong track on immigration, the way this survey happened from these open results. We should interpret people answering wrong track as mostly people who are not favorable of immigration policy right now.
Exactly.
Give me a couple examples of some quotes there.
All right. So, for example, we have I have a ton, so I'm just trying to get a good one
right.
for you. All right. So this is from an 87-year-old from Duluth. They don't seem to want to accept the customs of our country or constitution, and it's causing serious problems, they being immigrants. One that's more right track, my own personal experience, I have helped new families, handed out food and clothes. My son lives in a community where where he is the minority and the refugees are happy. They are not moving back to their countries. And so we'll see. We will hear a lot more like this.
Well, and that's the question to you. And I think to Andy's point, it is purposely a vague, I mean, some vagueness here from your interpretation is a good thing. I mean, I think we're going to get people saying, you're asking the wrong question, you're asking it wrong, but your purpose in saying right track, wrong track here is what?
Well, I think we wanted to serve up a very basic question. Just do you feel like the present policies and the present activity mm-hmm. kind of is mm-hmm. in alignment with your personal sense of the world? And then we have all these additional statements from folks to interpret that for us. But it helps us with one broad measure, look across the whole survey mm-hmm. and other areas of public life.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and your point is to say if you're confused or thrown by the right track, wrong track question, well, 85% of us think we're providing safe drinking water. So that's a pretty easy number to interpret from this result. So then when it comes down to welcoming immigrants and refugees, we get into this. And I want to hear from you as well. That is the question that was posed on the survey. Do you think Minnesota is generally on the right track or wrong track when it comes to welcoming immigrants and refugees? Give us a call, 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and don't call or text if you're driving. So we are going to explore this hour, this question, around the community of St. Cloud, because the topic came to a head recently at a city council meeting. A member of the council there, Jeff Johnson, proposed a resolution to call for a moratorium on the city accepting new refugees. Opponents raised the constitutionality of such a request, but that constitutional question aside, we wanted to explore why he felt this was a topic worth bringing up for debate. His moratorium was not successful. In fact, the city council ended up passing a resolution that reiterated its commitment to making refugees feel welcome in the city. Here's Jeff Johnson.
Well, I think as a kid growing up, I was more concerned with milk and cows and driving tractor. And, back then, a handshake was a man's word, and we didn't have 15 lawyers and 20 contracts for various things that we do now. But, you know, my politics on this is much more recent when it came to my attention that Lutheran Social Services and St. Cloud were just not following the federal statutes.
What is the concern specifically that you have, even if they weren't, in your opinion, following that statute?
My concern is that 8 U.S. Code 1522 has very specific language about state and local government involvement in respect to, you know, a local government having a specific role prior to refugee replacement. So this resolution deals with public policy and the economics of refugee resettlement.
I get you have a concern with Lutheran Social Services, but I mean, is there a broader concern? You talk about not targeting immigrants, but specifically being interested in discussing refugees. Why? Why is that necessary for the public square?
I think the focal issue on this, or a main focal issue, Tom, is this is taxation without representation. What we have here in St. Cloud, and I've seen this in other states as well, we have a nonprofit organization receiving federal dollars, and their meetings are not exclusively public. And the other issue is the refugee resettlement program itself. I'm not trying to, you know, prohibit people from coming and going. This doesn't even deal with folks that are here through secondary migration or that are here on primary refugee resettlement in the past. This deals with the fact that St. Cloud, we have a capacity number, 225 refugees, and the language talks about that state and local government needs to be at the table prior to placement of refugees through primary resettlement. That's the distinction I'm making here, and that just hasn't occurred.
Your resolution, which was rejected recently at the meeting, includes, to your point, what you just said about these 225, which is the stated number for Lutheran Social Services. You write, "The overall quality of life for St. Cloud residents will continue to be adversely impaired by excessive demands on local resources if primary resettlement continues." What proof do you have that that's in fact the case? We're talking about 225 people in a city of 69,000.
Well, that's a common argument I hear, that it's only 225, Tom. The problem is when you look at the multiplier effect, when you look at the number that get assigned to Wilmer, that get assigned to Minneapolis, that get assigned to Fort Wayne, Indiana, that get assigned to Los Angeles, once those folks are here, they can legally, and they should, be able to move around freely. So when I hear that it's only 225 that affect St. Cloud, that's not an accurate depiction of what's going on.
Your point being that it may be 225 here, but if it's 225 somewhere else and somewhere else, once they're settled, they could then all come to St. Cloud? Is that your point?
Well, I'm not arguing they're all coming here, but they're free to move here. And so when I look at, you know, that multiplier effect, it's not just the 225. Let me give you an example I heard the other day. I talked to a business owner, and he was talking to one of his clients. I believe he was a Somali gentleman. And the owner hadn't seen him in about a year. And so the owner struck up a conversation. "Hey, I haven't seen you in a year. What's going on? How are things going?" And he said, "Oh, in the last year, I had moved to Colorado with my family." I think he had a wife and two kids. "And I ended up moving back to Minnesota." And of course, the owner was curious and said, "Why did you move back to Minnesota?" He says, "Because Colorado doesn't have health care coverage for my children. So we came back to Minnesota." And I looked at the business owner. I said, "You know, as a father, I said, I find no fault with this man. That is something that if I was in his shoes, I would do the exact same thing." So the issue is economics. And that's what I keep going back to, is the economics of refugee resettlement with state and local impact. I can't even honestly answer you as far as the 225 refugees coming for the next fiscal year. Is that a good number? Should that number be increased or decreased? The answer I have for you is I don't know, because I'm not at the table having the discussion with Lutheran Social Services and my colleagues on the council and state officials. And I find that very troubling.
Are you, Councilmember Johnson, afraid of refugees or immigrants? Is that at all part of this debate? When you talk to your neighbors who are with you on this topic, is there fear of these people?
No, I have zero fear of refugees. I have zero fear of almost anything here. Actually, some of the people I work with are folks from third world countries. I'd say almost a third of my clientele are folks from Saudi Arabia And yes, even some people from Somalia. So the answer is, I'm not afraid of them, but I'm not afraid to talk about the hard economics of this program.
What do you say to people who hear this, who see your resolution, and draw the conclusion that you're racist, that you are anti-Muslim, that you are anti-Somali?
Well, the first answer I give back to those folks is, where in my resolution does it talk about a specific group? So in other words, Tom, in this case, you identified a specific group, okay, in religion. You mentioned Islam. Now, the refugee resettlement program, there's approximately 42 to 45 different countries that participate in that program. Those folks have, you know, different religions. And what I did not do is I did not identify a specific religion or a specific country. And some folks are trying to do that. And they're saying, why are you picking on Somalis? And I said, I didn't mention anything about Somalis, anything more than I mentioned people from Sweden. I'm talking about the program in general.
But this is happening in a time and in a moment and in a place of St. Cloud where there have been strains. There was the stabbing at the mall, and there are countless efforts in various communities to say we have got to do better as St. Cloud at welcoming and accepting especially Somalis. I mean, your resolution, I understand, doesn't specifically use the word Somali or Muslim, but it's not happening in a vacuum, council member.
Oh, that's correct. There's a lot of moving parts here. You know, are there people out there that hate refugees and Somalis? Yes, there is. Unfortunately, there is. I don't think that's a lion's share of Minnesotans. I think for the most part, Minnesotans are pretty hospitable. They're welcoming. But I think the story that isn't being told is some of our long-term residents that have been here for 20, 30, 40 years have legitimate concerns, and those are not being addressed by the media.
And list them for me in that case. I know you have in that throughout the conversation, but then just hunker down and list what those concerns are.
Well, some of those, you know, those concerns are just, in the public square. I've heard some residents, I have a police report here that one group of refugees were saying, this is our park, you can't be here. And one person exposed himself, and I saw the police report. So there are definitely some hard issues that are going on. And I'm not trying to sit here and say that every member of this particular group does that. Of course not. But there are some problems here in St. Cloud, and they're not being addressed.
And are they problems that you believe are only committed or perpetrated by refugees?
No, of course not. You know, criminals come from all sorts of backgrounds, not just one country or one group. You know, I'm real careful when someone says, you know, what do you think about this group of people? And my answer is, I make a case-by-case judgment. What's in the heart? I want to get to know you on a one-to-one basis. And, you know, unfortunately, there are people out there that do stereotype, and they have a bad experience with one group, and all of a sudden they just don't like that whole group. That is unfortunate. That's not how I operate.
When the council recently passed this resolution that wasn't your resolution, but rather a resolution in support of a just and welcoming community, as they call it, and that was by a 5-1 vote. How did you interpret that vote? Was that a repudiation of what you were trying to do?
Well, first of all, it violated council rules. I didn't even know about this resolution, Tom. It just showed up. I didn't even get a chance to read it, and I went back and checked the tapes. 14 minutes elapsed from when a fellow council member handed this out to the council into when we voted on it, and I can't in good faith vote on something that I've seen for 14 minutes in which I haven't read.
Was that not also, even if they broke council rules in your opinion, were they not trying to repudiate what you had been saying with the resolution you wanted to say? Did you interpret it that way?
I interpret it as a pure and simple ambush. I think to try and throw a resolution down and vote on it in 14 minutes without seeing it in advance is just grossly unethical.
Do you think
it was an ambush?
Do you think if your moratorium idea were put to the voters of St. Cloud, what do you think would be the spread on that vote?
I think it would actually pass. I think it would pass overwhelmingly.
Why?
Why? Because, again, it comes back to taxation without representation. We're talking about federal tax dollars going into this program, and we don't know the specifics of how much is being spent. We don't know why federal law is not being followed at the local level. So there's a lot of people that are very upset. One day I got 16 voicemails in a row. All 16 were supportive. These were primarily from people, citizens that have lived here for some time, that said, this is taxation without representation. It is about time someone starts asking questions about the economic impact of the program.
Isn't it possible that taxation without representation is a cover, is a charade to cover up a bigger and more pertinent viewpoint that these people scare me and I don't want them living in my community?
Of course, you might have some segment that believes that. You know, I can't say never say never, never say always. My suspicion here that predominantly from what I've heard of, most of these people are welcoming, they care, but they want these questions asked.
What do you hope Minnesota writ large thinks about, addresses, talks about in terms of immigration in the future?
Well, I think with my resolution, keep in mind that, you know, a resolution, even if it did pass, it's not binding. All it is, I think, is it's a talking point. My resolution essentially said, you know, we have a problem, an economic problem with this program. There's too many secrets. There's a lot of money being spent, and the citizens are starting to ask the questions that have been asked in the closet in the coffee shop for some time. So I'm hopeful that more and more people are going to be having discussions about this. I have to say, I am really, really disappointed in a lion's share of our politicians in this state. They're so scared to death about even talking about this topic, about the economics. You know, are the refugees getting jobs? You know, how many, what's the capacity issue related to St. Cloud? These are questions that we should be having, and they're scared to death. I hear state senators and state reps say things like, there's nothing the state can do. Well, if you look in the federal law here in subpart K in 400-30, talks about the state having the ability to withdraw from a refugee program. Now, I am not arguing we should do that. All I'm arguing is I want to get the numbers. I want an economic impact study as it relates to St. Cloud to find out where we're at. And I've always argued this. If we're going to have a refugee resettlement program, Tom, don't you think we ought to have a really good one? Shouldn't it be transparent?
Councilmember Jeff Johnson, City of St. Cloud. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate you talking to me.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate your time, too, as well.
One more note on Johnson's comments there. He mentioned an incident in a park where someone exposed himself. That was actually in Waite Park, not in St. Cloud. And the police in Waite Park confirmed today that there was a complaint made, but no one was arrested because the person filing the complaint was unable to identify a suspect. There was also a story in the Star Tribune today about last night. The Stearns County Commission got a report on the effect of refugee resettlement on the county's budget. And the line reads from this report that refugee resettlement in the area has had little to no impact on the county budget. That's from a Star Trib report on that event, or on that meeting there last night. Let's take some calls here. We're also going to hear some more comments that were in the survey here from Cassie. But first, let's go to Mike, who's in St. Cloud. Mike, we have a lot of calls, so if you can make a brief statement, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm a member of the United Way's Central Minnesota Homelessness and Community Solution Team. We had a meeting this morning, as a matter of fact. The immigration issue comes up in that we're trying to get the city to acknowledge the need for affordable housing. And the city council won't even pass a resolution acknowledging that there's a need for affordable housing in this area. We call it NIMBY, which is not in my backyard. What we found, and this has been going on for quite a while, is that people are afraid, and they're afraid that this affordable housing would attract more immigrants, aka more Somalis, because we have a population. By the way, the statistical metropolitan statistical area of St. Cloud, which includes Sartell, Sauk Rapids, Waite Park, is 200,000. You said 69,000. We're a town of about 200,000 if you expand
yeah.
it to that.
And 69, Mike, yes, you are correct. In 69, I was referring to just the city limits, but you are correct that it's a broader metropolitan area. And Andy knows about that as well from the demographics there. Mike, thanks so much for that call and that comment here. Let's go to John, who's in Woodbury. Hi, John.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Your thoughts here today.
Yes, very good. I think in general, I'm very happy with the way Minnesota is going. We seem to be a progressive and a welcoming state as far as immigrants. I think in general, in the United States, immigration is so important. It's in our DNA. We our country was created as a place for immigrants by immigrants. Every one of us has an ancestor, unless we're Native American, who came here from someone else. It makes us all better. So it's worth spending our tax dollars on to support people, you know, immigrants and refugees that come to the U.S.
John, thanks so much for the comment. Sam had called from St. Paul saying he has a concern that resources can't keep up with population growth. We get a lot of that. And Cassie, I think you got a lot of those comments.
Yes.
Again, when we put this survey out in August and September, people were allowed to just throw out open comments, right? Just type down what you think. So let's hear more of what they said.
So I wanted to, you know, get to a point that was made earlier about the difference between immigrants and refugees. And one respondent had a really good insight on that, that said, this person said, this probably boils down to just the beginning. People don't understand the difference between immigrants and refugees. There's still a little of white racism in Minnesota, and I think there could be more support for this group. And so that kind of gets to this idea, okay, well, is there an understanding of the difference between the refugees and immigrants? And all the quotes I'm pulling right now are from St. Cloud. And going back to this idea of tax, the tax burden, there are people who felt that way. For example, there is a 38-year-old from St. Cloud who says, we got so many people to take care of now, and we got all these immigrants coming in free, and then our taxes go up because we have to feed them and everything else, and they get everything for free. And, you know, there are others that reflect the same idea.
Right, which is not accurate. They're paying rent. They're paying taxes. I mean, something that I know that groups are working to debunk.
Exactly.
As well. But it's still showing up in these survey results, thinking it's all given on a silver platter.
And I think that's something to keep in mind when you know, if you're looking at these results online or when I'm reading them, is that these are people's perceptions. And this isn't necessarily people pulling out statistics or an encyclopedia. Do people use encyclopedias still?
online at least they do, Cassie.
So that's just something else to keep in mind.
The perspective now in this conversation as we talk about this survey from APM's research lab here. More information at nprnews.org/groundlevel. We'd love to hear your thoughts as well. 1-800-242-2828. Again, we're concentrating on St. Cloud. You heard Andy Egbert here from the research lab note earlier how different this question was answered in different parts of the state, including the St. Cloud area. Ion Omar was born in Somalia, resettled in Georgia first, moved to St. Cloud after high school to go to St. Cloud State, and now teaches at Tech High School in St. Cloud. Ian told us that when she was in Georgia, she was in a mostly African-American community and felt she blended in, but in St. Cloud, she says she feels it's a place that emphasizes differences.
People aren't interested in knowing who you are. It seems like people are interested in who you are only to secure their safety, only to put you in a certain box. So I recall people will ask, in the beginning, they would say, where are you from? And I would say, oh, I'm from Georgia. And they'd always follow it up with, where are you really from? And it wasn't for the sake of interpersonal communication. It was more so of, I need to quickly identify you so that I know you're not a danger to me. And you stood out as a young Muslim woman. It's obvious that I often stand out compared to my native-born St. Cloud community members. So it got to the point where I started to closely realize that I am truly a minority here. And if you have enough people asking you or inquiring about you, then there's something that I am unaware of, which led to my willingness, my will to learn what it is that makes me stand out.
What did you find?
Well, I had to learn about my faith. That was the very first thing. When I was a child, I took for granted what I was taught by my father about the five pillars and the purpose of my religion as submission and tolerance. I took all that for granted until people started to ask me questions such as, what is Islam? So I was able to learn so I can accurately define for others that Islam is submission and tolerance and peace. Learn about the five pillars. But I also, on the other hand, I had to learn about their faith so I can somehow mediate to say, okay, this is what you believe in and this is how we are alike.
One of the reasons we were interested to talk with you today is that we did this survey here at Minnesota Public Radio about a host of things. One of the, you know, one particular issue that we're talking about this hour is how Minnesotans feel on the issue of immigration and refugees. And the question is whether, you know, do people think Minnesota's generally on the right track or the wrong track when it comes to welcoming immigrants and refugees? What would you say is your answer to that?
Well, in St. Cloud right now, if you look at what's on paper, I would say we're on the wrong track. However, if you look at, from personal experience, going to these panel discussions, the turnout rate to counter anti-refugee rhetoric, if you look at the numbers and the people that I work with, I would say we're on the right track. So on paper, we have a lot of work to do, but in conversation and in dialogue and the work that I see every day in the community with, for example, with the Somali Professional Women's Group, it's a group of women that help counter the assumptions and stereotypes of refugees taking handouts and such. So we're putting ourselves out there in the community to show the naysayers that we're working just as hard.
Yeah, and what you're referring to on paper more recently is this conversation and debate at the city council over this resolution on whether to put a moratorium on St. Cloud allowing new refugees. Aside from the debate about whether that's constitutional, I'll put that aside for a moment, Ion. What are your reflections on the content and the crux of that conversation and the conversation that ended up taking place in St. Cloud?
That's not just Johnson's doing, right? And one man can't come up with such a huge idea without having some support system. And this has been in talks. This has been in conversation since the election last year. A great amount of supporters showed up. And those are the individuals that I'm concerned about, the individuals who feel that this could be done, this can be done, and it should be done. And the message that I received from Johnson and his supporters is that, personally, after living here since 2005, I'm still unaccepted. I'm still not accepted in St. Cloud, that I'm not good enough, even having an education and playing a critical role in the education system as an educator and knowing these wonderful women, female professionals in the community, that we're still not where we should be according to those individuals. It definitely crushed our spirit.
Councilmember Johnson, who I spoke to about this, said, well, wait a minute, my resolution doesn't use the word Somali, doesn't use the word Muslim. Don't draw a conclusion that I'm going after one group when I'm talking overall about Lutheran social services and refugees in general. Do you accept that argument that he didn't use the word Somali in his resolution, therefore he's not targeting you?
I don't buy it because who I am, I'm a Muslim Somali American refugee, and I always define myself as that. If just by addressing the word refugee, whether he says Somali or not, I'm still in that category because I am a refugee, and so is my family. My sister, who's a nurse, my brother, who graduated with a criminal justice, we're all refugees at the end.
Do you the fact that that council meeting ended with a completely different vote, an overwhelming vote on a resolution in support of a just and welcoming community? What are your thoughts on how it actually ended up going?
Well, it ended up very well with the new resolution. However, I'm still concerned about his supporters who were not satisfied. And I still believe that the best form of media is word of mouth. I'm concerned with the message that those individuals will then spread among in their family and they're close to their neighbor. So, yes, it was a win, but then I think close to 300 people or so showed up. And there was a good amount of Johnson supporters. Those are the people who are going out to the polls to vote. Those are the people who are involved in community issues and in politics. So how do we get to those people so that they are not afraid of people like me or the word refugee? How do I somehow get to those individuals so that I can break down the word refugee?
Do you have any answers on how to do that?
Well, I've been doing these panels, these discussion panels, and I've been trying to promote dialogue. And slowly, I find that people are starting to get to know a refugee, not based on facts, not based on data, but based on feelings, as based on who I am, my narrative, and where I came from, and how I've gotten to where I'm at currently. I'm not giving a history lesson. I'm just changing hearts, just using my personal narrative.
The council member Johnson, who we spoke to, we asked him, you know, his original resolution was proposing a moratorium on St. Cloud introducing and welcoming new refugees. Again, constitutional debate aside, I said, what if we put that to a vote of the people? What if that were a referendum? His impression, his thought, his guess is that St. Cloud would overwhelmingly approve his resolution if it were put to a vote. Do you agree?
Unfortunately, I do agree with him, and I hate to say it, just because I feel that St. Cloud is not where it should be. If you think of how we voted last year's election, I feel that if we were to put it to the people, just the majority of St. Cloud community members are native born or have lived in St. Cloud, and the individuals who are involved in politics and who stay engaged in political issues, I would say that, it would probably win. Now, and again, I hate to say that, and that's just how I feel. I feel that with all the work that we've been doing, we're not quite I would like us to be.
What do you hope comes from this?
I'm hoping that at some point we start to realize that the best source of persuasion is pathos, right? Feelings. And our political leaders often use feelings to divide us. They come up with different sorts of rhetoric. They'll throw facts and they'll throw examples out there to divide us. And right now we're going through a stage of displaced rage, displaced hate. And the only way to get out of that is to meet someone, to meet a refugee, rather than pay attention to all that's going on in our politics or to simply get to know your neighbor. What it means to be a refugee. It's not by choice. We have to remember that to be a refugee, I'm not here to just start a whole new life. I was young when we left Somalia. I was forced out of my country due to civil war. It was literally die or get out. And fortunately, my parents chose to live. And it's because they chose to live that we made it to America. And in the process of living in America, we were able to make something great out of ourselves.
Ayan Omar, a teacher at Tech High School in St. Cloud, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tom.
We're talking this hour with several guests about the APM and NPR Ground Level Survey. You can find more information on this survey at nprnews.org/groundlevel. And we have in the studio here Andy Egbert from APM's research lab, also Cassie Absar from the lab. And Andy, just for people who may have been joining us late, the reason we're talking about this immigration issue and question that was on this survey is because of the extent to which there was such disparate answers in so many different ways you look at this, where you live in the state, your political affiliation, and the like.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably the only area that we've examined where we didn't see much difference was by age, and that's somewhat interesting. But nearly every other way you could slice the data, we saw huge divides open up. And probably the most stark was really the political divide on this one. We did ask folks about their political affiliation, and we found 7 in 10 Democrats said we were on the right track for immigration.
For welcoming immigrants.
For welcoming immigrants and refugees. And that falls to 4 in 10 Republicans, so the minority of Republicans. We also asked folks at the time of the survey whether they were approving or disapproving of President Trump. And we see that those who approve of Trump, it falls even a little more from Republicans in the survey. So then we're down to 38% who say we are on the right track.
Let's go to Linda, who's on the phone in Stearns County, which is where St. Cloud is. Linda, what are your thoughts here today? Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Well, I think Ms. Omar is on the right track, and I think Mr. Johnson is on the right track. They both have valid points, and we are at an impasse in this county where it's a county of traditionally Norwegian and German immigrants who've lived here for generations. We moved here in the 90s, so we're still considered outsiders.
Yeah.
And we're European.
Right.
However, I think the crux of the problem lies with how these poor immigrants were brought into this area. We have white bread America who've rarely been exposed to any other races or cultures, including European, Japanese, Asian. Mm-hmm. They're very closed-door societies up here. And then all of a sudden, we have people coming in who have no idea where they're going into, really, other than it's cold. Yeah. And the communities have not been told that anyone's coming. People just show up. Our representatives have no idea.
Linda, I'm glad you called. You brought up a really interesting point, which is why I want to bring on our final guest here for the hour to start with that. Natalie Ringsmuth is founder and director of an organization which I think a lot of people in St. Cloud are aware of, Unite Cloud. And Natalie, it was so interesting to hear Linda talk about finding that both guests we had a point and that we're at an impasse. Do you agree with that sentiment, that the St. Cloud area is at an impasse with what to do?
I think that's a pretty popular sentiment. And I go back to talking about our political divide. And we realize in St. Cloud, when we have, you know, the high 60s, 68%, I think, in Stearns County that voted for our current president. If we say anyone who voted for President Trump is this, that is not going to be acceptable to our community. And it's not even something that's going to be good for our community. So especially for Unite Cloud, we really try to not focus on the political divide and instead focus on relationships. I think it's really interesting what Linda said, that these poor immigrants are brought to this area. And that's something as well that we're trying to overcome. We don't want our community to continue to move in sympathy for these poor people, especially if I can say these poor Black people or these poor Muslim people. That's not something that really energizes community and energizes relationships. So what we're really trying to do is get people in the same room together and say, if you have a hard question for a refugee or immigrant or Muslim or LGBT community or any marginalized group, we want you to talk to each other and ask them. And in fact, we've found our refugee and immigrant community very willing to answer these questions openly and honestly.
Let's take another call here from Robert, who is in Ramsey. Hi, Robert. What would you add to this? Go right ahead.
When you talk about 229 refugees moving into the St. Cloud area, it's not 229 refugees. It's 2 years from now, when they're legal citizens and they bring over their aunts, their uncles, their cousins, their nieces, their nephews, their parents, their grandparents. So 229 refugees is really more like 1,500 or 2,000. And 2 years from now, when they bring over their relatives, it's going to be 10,000. And you're talking about a culture that absolutely refuses to assimilate. They expect us to live by their rules. And 5% of their culture thinks they have a God-given right to kill us if we won't live under their laws. This is not acceptable. No other group of immigrants has come to this country and said, live under our laws or we'll overthrow you and kill you.
Robert, thanks for the call. Natalie, to what extent have you heard sentiments like what Robert just said?
You know, that's really par for the course for what we hear in St. Cloud. It starts with, oh, there's this many, and then they're going to come, and then they're going to kill us. Like, that's really the way that it goes in a lot of conversations. And when you get to the they're going to kill us sort of talk, then you get into these percentages, like 5% of 1.3 billion people in the world. Who said that, that many Muslims are wanting to kill us? And not that there isn't radicalness in that religion. There is. But the point is, we start at one point talking about who is our neighbor. Who are our refugee neighbors? And I work part-time for an immigration attorney in town. And so I've seen women and children, let's just say this example, women and a woman or two children who are here alone, and they're working hard to bring the husband here. And so we have these two roads that we can go down. If people are really concerned about the number of refugees and immigrants that are coming here, then they want to stop all refugee resettlement and immigration to the St. Cloud area. But at the same time, and out of the same topic, you get, well, but they're taking all of our social services and they're taking so much money. And so what I have talked to people is about the fact that 99% of Lutheran Social Services refugees that were resettled last year was family reunification. It's things like a three-year-old girl united with her mother, a father united with their family. And of course, what's going to happen when you have the father united with the family? A much quicker rate you will get off of social services if you're not off already. So there's this really interesting story that one of our speaking team members at Unite Cloud tells, that when he came here as a refugee, and he said within 2 months he was working at Target. And he said, so at that point, I didn't get the allotted amount that I could get for the first few months that I came here because I was working.
And what you're talking about is that there is an amount of money as a grant to say, look, you're new in the country. Here's what, $1,000, $2,000, something like
that?
It's
a monthly amount. And even what one of my friends who also came here as a refugee was saying online yesterday was, remember, we have to pay back the plane ticket cost over 3 years. Mm-hmm. And if we don't, then we're taken to task on that. So it's not, there's again a divide of people. We took a poll, an informal poll on Unite Cloud's social media yesterday, and we said, how many of you have heard that refugees get free everything for 7 years? And just overwhelmingly, everyone that was writing
they've
in has heard that. Yes.
Yeah, they've heard it. They may not believe it, but they've heard it.
And one of the reasons why we talk about stuff like that is so we can find the truth out about what's really true about that.
So that guy who went to work for Target, though, he's not getting a free pass on in his income taxes.
No, and not only that, and people say, well, no, but that guy doesn't have to file taxes for 7 years. No, that's not true either. You know, so we're making up so much information, and that's really where Unite Cloud comes in, to try to debunk rumors and to give actual information.
Cassie, how does what we've talked about here, some of the comments we've heard, parallel with what we saw in the survey when people were allowed to just basically say whatever they wanted to say? What were the comments like?
So we do have some of those more, some comments like the last caller. So, for example, there was someone who's from central Minnesota. And when we say central Minnesota, it does exclude the St. Cloud area, but same region, who says, we need to weed out some of the Muslims. I'm worried about that. I don't want them killing my grandchildren. And, you know, we have another comment from someone from St. Cloud who says, you know, no one likes the Somalis. And then, you know, just some of the perceptions. Another one would be, you know, we're on the wrong track because a lot of this flu that is coming over here is brought by immigrants. I think we are welcoming them over, and they are because these are open-ended and verbatim, sometimes they don't make perfect sense. I think we are welcoming them over, and they don't have anything to do. And so,
yeah. Well, Andy, it's so interesting to hear what Natalie says as well, because it sounds like part of Natalie's job is to be a mythbuster. But we just talked yesterday about the lack of trust in media. So even if we do this show here today and say, well, this actually isn't true, or the Star Trib writes a story about what Stearns County talked about, we then go back to the survey you did to talk about the lack of trust in media. It seems like we're in for a collision at the end of that sentence.
Yeah, that's interesting you brought that up, Tom, because we actually see a lot of commonality in the survey between folks who hold low trust in media, who also think we're on the wrong track for welcoming immigrants and refugees. But if I could just elaborate for a second on something Natalie said. She said, you know, these sort of myths are destroyed in relationship when people meet their neighbors and they learn about them. And one thing that's kind of interesting that we just know from a demographic understanding of our state is these areas, the four areas of our state where we had higher number of people saying wrong track, we actually have the fewest number of immigrants in those communities. So the four areas of the state that were more likely to say right track actually have a much bigger share of their population represented by immigrants. So some of what might be happening here is just less exposure, more sense of newness, and kind of earlier in that maybe continuum of relationship.
Do you agree with that, Natalie?
Yeah, and I think that's really what our next and really our continuing focus for Unite Cloud is to have people know their neighbor. You may have seen some of our Love Your Neighbor signs around Minnesota, and that's really our first entry into who is your neighbor. And then after you realize, okay, it's important for me to love my neighbor, then moving on to knowing your neighbor is really important. We really do work a lot in central Minnesota, but we've been anywhere from, you know, down here in the cities to in Brainerd and Little Falls. And what we're hearing is a shift. So 2 years ago, when I'd go and speak in greater Minnesota, people would say, okay, as long as those immigrants and refugees don't come here, then fine. Then St. Cloud, deal with it. Well, I was in a small town at their chamber meeting talking about Unite Cloud just a couple weeks ago. And they said, you know what? Our community is going to change. And what can we do about it to get ahead of the problem that St. Cloud is currently having? Because we don't want to be seen as an unwelcoming community. It's bad for business. It's bad for schools. It's bad for people, you know, the white flight that is experienced sometimes, especially in St. Cloud. So there's a lot of communities that understand that what St. Cloud's reputation is, they don't want that reputation, and they need our help.
Cassie?
And just to build off what both of them said, I mean, throughout the survey, throughout the different, you know, regions that we looked at, there is this idea of people who said right track say it's because verbatim, I live next door to them. That's how I know we're on the right track.
So people who took the survey said,
yes,
I love, they're my neighbors, I love them, and therefore I'm going to answer this way on the survey.
They're coming into the community, my sons, exactly.
A few other comments. Oh, and Andy, one final thought there, yeah.
Well, I recall from some of the comments that people gave, oftentimes the right track folks were commenting on a direct relationship. And oftentimes it wasn't neighbors, it was in the workplace. Right. Someone talked about working in a poultry plant or just other ways that they've seen a real economic benefit. And this seemed to inform a lot of right track. I know there are a lot of wrong track folks who fear economic costs, but it came out on both sides of the survey.
Yes. A couple final thoughts here from calls we're unfortunately not going to be able to get to. Huda in St. Cloud says, I'm Somali, and I feel very connected with the community in St. Cloud. Myra in Minneapolis says, you can't generalize. Not all Muslims are criminals. David notes, this is a country of immigrants. Maybe if people thought about that, they'd have a change of heart. Natalie, your final thoughts here in the last 30 seconds.
Yeah,
or so.
I want to address something that one of the callers said when he said that eventually all Muslims are going to kill us. I want everyone to realize that that's coming from speakers that are coming into greater Minnesota, especially small town Minnesota, where there's not many immigrants. And they're coming in, usually they're former Muslims turned Christian pastors. They're being hosted in a number of ways in the communities. And they're saying, just be careful, because one day all Muslims will rise up to behead your children and grandchildren. I've heard this with my own ears in these anti-immigrant meetings. And the only way that we're going to really reverse that is that we have to hear from Muslims who Muslims are, period.
Thank you so much for being here. More online at nprnews.org/groundlevel.